Are you a cat person? A dog person? Maybe both? I'm both. I have a cat named Ray and a dog named Lady. And we have talked about our relationships with our dogs on past programs, so today we offer equal time to cats. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us on this Monday, October 14th. I am thrilled to have with us the author of a new book on the science of cats, on why cats do what they do, with all sorts of information on the past, the present, and the future of cats. And I hope we can all learn a little bit more about how we can improve our cats' lives and our relationship with our cats. Does your cat ever do things that you don't understand? What is it with cats and boxes anyway? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guest. Very happy to have with us John Bradshaw, Foundation Director of the Anthrozoology Institute at the University of Bristol's, author most recently of Cat Sense, How the New Feline Science Can Make You a Better Friend to Your Pet. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us. And you are also the author of a similar book on dogs, Dog Sense, about the science of dogs. So are you a cat person or a dog person?
Oh, I think I'm a little bit of both. I kind of think of cats and dogs are about as similar as strawberry jelly and cheese.
Yeah,
they're both good to eat, but oh, not to eat, obviously. But they're both good things. But they're so different that I think they demand completely separate appreciation.
I agree. But why is it, do you think, that either you love cats or you don't? And with dogs, there isn't quite those polar opposites.
That is indeed the case. You find a few people who really don't like dogs at all, but you can usually trace that back, or they can trace it back to something that happened in their childhood or early adult life. They got bitten or something like that. Whereas with cats, there's about one person in 20, we reckon, worldwide, who really find cats quite repellent, the way perhaps a lot more people feel about big spiders or snakes or whatever. They don't know why, they can't explain it, but they really don't want cats to be near them. And I think that's part of the difference, is that there really are quite a lot of people out there who don't see cats as being pleasant to have around at all.
Why do you like cats so much? Why are they good pets?
I think I like cats because they are this kind of peculiar, unique, I think. It's an overused word, but I think in this case it's true. Absolutely unique mixture of a wild animal and a very domestic animal. So that they share our accommodation with us. They show us affection. But at the same time, you can see just by looking in their eyes that they are living their own lives alongside us rather than, in the case of a dog, living their lives through us.
Let's talk a little bit about the past of cats. How did humans and cats first find each other?
Well, the conventional story is that we found each other in Egypt about 4,000 or 5,000 years ago. But recent studies have kind of pushed that back quite a lot further. In fact, almost twice as far, to sort of 8,000 or even 10,000 years ago, when possibly even before, just to anchor it slightly, the invention of pottery. So that the idea of firing clay had not come along at the time that cats first started to make a link with us. I don't think they were pets at that stage. I think the most likely scenario is that they came in to help us out, as we saw it. I don't think they saw it that way, to help us out with the problems we were having with mice and things infesting our stores of grain and nuts and all those kinds of things. So to begin with, they might have been a little bit more like an urban fox or an urban raccoon or something like that, something that was kind of around and tolerated and in this case, appreciated, but not really forming any kind of companion relationship. Maybe for several thousand years, the first records we do have of cats being companions is indeed from Egypt.
Why did the Egyptians go so far as to worship cats?
That again is a interesting question lost in the annals of history. They didn't start off by worshipping domestic cats. I think maybe part of the clue to it. The Bast or Bastet, the goddess who became associated with cats, was originally given the form, or at least the head, of either a lion or a cheetah. The Egyptians had all kinds of animals. They were a very animal-orientated society. They kept loads of different kinds of animals as pets. They kept a lot of tame animals. And so a lot of their religion was associated, became associated with animals in one way or another. And this particular cult started off, as I said, with big cats, which they used to capture and keep in cages. And then somehow kind of mutated over the course of probably several hundred years into the idea that the goddess was actually really more like a domestic cat than like a lion. So it's something that seems to have just kind of happened without any kind of deliberate, I think, decision being made that the domestic cat was the perfect thing to worship.
Why did the Catholic Church turn against cats in the 1200s?
Well, I think the whole business of the cat becoming unpopular in the Middle Ages, I think it has to be looked at as probably something which is more official than real, should we say. I mean, in some parts of Europe, I think we have reasonably good evidence that a lot of cats were killed. But I think they were also, at the same time, people who were a bit more sensible, perhaps, farmers and so on, who valued the cats as vermin controllers, were probably just keeping quiet and letting the cats carry on do their work. But why the church picked on them, I think, is because of a residue of this cat worship, which had spread from Egypt into Greece and Rome and into various cults all the way around the Mediterranean. And some of those we think persisted on well into the Middle Ages in rural areas where there was still kind of pagan worship. And so the church saw the cat as a symbol of paganism, something you could actually target, and so prohibited them.
And so when did the black cat become associated with Halloween and witches?
Well, the black cat is really quite interesting because different cultures have very different perceptions of it. Over here in the UK, nowadays, black cats are often thought of as bringing good luck rather than bad luck. And the same apparently is the case in Japan, whereas in the United States, I believe, and in many parts of continental Europe, the black cat is seen as bringing bad luck and to be associated with evil in many ways. So I think the association between the black cat and especially, but cats in general, and witchcraft dates back to these pagan superstitions that were still going on in Europe in the Middle Ages. And so they were the church, I think, but in particular, were able to kind of label these things as being part of the devil worship and to be something that should be stamped out. And so the black cat got this association, which is we've got this last, I think, little bit of that lingering on today with the black cat as being one of the images we associate with Halloween.
Right. So how has the relationship between cats and humans varied over the centuries?
It's varied a lot, and I think it's also varied within cultures. I mean, one of the things I find fascinating about the ancient Egyptians, which I can't quite get my head around, is that they were, on the one hand, very devoted pet owners. Certainly the more affluent households would have pet cats. They seem to have very personal relationships with them in the same way that we do today. They weren't just regarding them as kind of disposable pet controllers, pest controllers, as some people still do today and have done over the centuries. They really regarded them as companions. And they show this particularly in the way that they mourned them when they died. They had specific mourning ceremonies for cats, few people have today, but not many. And they would, if they had the money, they would spend a great deal on the burial. They would make elaborate caskets for the cat to be buried in and so on. Some of them were covered in gold leaf. I mean, there was no expense spared. At the same time, other Egyptians around the back of the temples were breeding cats specifically for sacrifice and mummification and then sale as votive offerings for people to come to the temple and buy a mummified cat to keep them in with the gods for a few weeks or months or whatever. people must have known that, you know, that cats are this dual status, if you like, disposable sacrificial object on the one hand and adored pet on the other. But they seem to have managed to keep those two things separate in their minds. And I think that kind of typifies, in some way, the relationship we've had with cats all the way down the century. As a race, I think, as the human race, I think individual people have strong ideas about whether they like cats or not. But if you look at how culture has perceived cats and portrayed cats and encouraged them or discouraged them, I think that's varied a lot, as perhaps one kind of person has gained more influence over another. So I think, for the future, I think the message is we mustn't take cats for granted. We must try, if we like cats, as I do, of course, must try and put their case for them, because they have been unpopular in the past and they might be unpopular again.
Well, we'll move into the present day of cats and our relationship with cats and finding out some of these mysteries of cat behavior. But before we do that, are cats totally domesticated right now?
Pedigree cats are, yes. I mean, if you're talking about a purebred Siamese or a Persian or an exotic or whatever, then yes, they have, you know, they have an established pedigree. They're bred by people, and that fills the definition of a domesticated animal. But the majority of people don't have pedigree cats, either over here in the UK or in the United States. So your common or garden alley cats, we call them moggies over here, is basically the offspring of a marriage or a mating, anyway, that was planned by the cats themselves. The female cats get out, they go and find themselves a tomcat, and maybe even several, and then choose between them which one is going to be the father, or which one they prefer to be the father of their kittens. And that's a characteristic of a wild animal. So we've got the potential for evolution still to be going on with cats, by the females choosing males, the males choosing females, and which of those animals what those animals are like, whether, for example, we've neutered them or not. Obviously, if they're neutered, they're not going to participate.
We'll continue talking about cats. You never know what you're going to hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk about why cats do what they do, and we will try to improve our relationship with our cats, and we will welcome your questions for our guest, John Bradshaw, who is the author of Cat Sense, How the New Feline Science Can Make You a Better Friend to Your Pet. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are in our fall membership drive, and we will get back to our guest and our topic on Cat Sense in just a few minutes. But first, Bill Martins is here to help make the case for you to go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make a gift in support of the programs that you count on.
Hey, last hour we heard from 72 listeners.
Wow.
That is awesome. So thank you very much for those pledges. This hour our goal is 60 pledges. So if we've done it once, we can do it again. And these hourly goals, by the way, are extremely important. They help us stay on track financially so we can keep the discussion going strong here on Wisconsin Public Radio. So take a moment right now and give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You give to Wisconsin Public Radio to support the programs because this is listener-supported radio. But as an added incentive, we have something special for you right now. It's the book Cat Sense, How the New Feline Science Can Make You a Better Friend to Your Pet, by our guest, John Bradshaw. It is yours when you give $15 a month to Wisconsin Public Radio. A $180 pledge goes a long way to supporting the programming that you value. And you'll also get this great book, something that you will want if you're a cat owner or if you know someone who is. Ask for it now when you make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We know that physical exercise is an important part of staying healthy. Well, so is mental exercise. Getting your daily mental workout is easy when you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Listening to Wisconsin Public Radio keeps your brain in great shape. Your gift of any amount will pay for the programming, and it keeps you and Wisconsin Public Radio healthy. So please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On Wisconsin Public Radio, you get programs that inform and inspire you, programs that entertain and engage you. You get these programs at the touch of a button or just the click of a mouse anytime you want.
And what makes it all possible? Well, you got it. You do. People who contribute to make it happen for themselves and for the community.
At Wisconsin Public Radio, membership matters. Become a member with your pledge of $5 a month or whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I would say that if you really enjoy public radio and you listen to it even occasionally, if it does something to enlighten you on a certain point of view, then that is value. It's valuable, but nothing in life that is of value is truly free. Being a sustaining member, even if you just donate a small amount each month, you know, what it would cost you for a cup of coffee is really, really worth it if you believe in what they're doing. And I do. I'm John from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you, John. You can pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Bill Martins, and we're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio during this fall membership drive. Maybe your gift is $10 or $20 a month. Maybe it's $15 a month. And you know what? If it's $15 a month or more, you can ask for Cat Sense as your thank you gift, the book that we are talking about this hour, all about cats. So make that pledge, whatever amount you choose, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I like that cat on the cover, too. It's like a little tuxedo cat kind of thing there. I like that coloring. Well, join your friends and neighbors who believe in WPR and believe in supporting it. It takes the support of everyone who listens to make this radio station as good as it can be.
When you make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you will be doing your part to make sure that the news and information that you need is here every day.
When you pledge, you'll be adding your voice to the 50,000 members who support Wisconsin Public Radio. Your contribution of any amount is pooled with other member contributions to make up the single largest piece of our budget.
We use that money to bring you great programs every day. So chip in, make your pledge now, whatever amount. Every pledge is needed, every pledge is appreciated. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 53 more pledges in about the next 35 minutes. So your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 supports the programs you count on.
And ask for the book Cat Sense with your pledge of $180 or more. That's $15 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you make your pledge, become a sustainer. Your sustaining membership automatically renews each year, and you'll pay your pledge in affordable monthly installments. It's really easy to set up. It's a great way to make a lasting impact on WPR. You choose how to give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
All right, thanks very much, Bill. We'll talk to you a little bit later. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are finding out some about the past, the present, and the future of our relationship with cats. And we'll talk more about why cats do what they do and how we can better understand them. And we're welcoming your questions for our guest. We're welcoming some stories you have about quirky things, perhaps, that your cat does. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call if you'd like to join us on air. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with John Bradshaw. He is the foundation director of the Anthrozoology Institute at the University of Bristol. He is the author, most recently, of Cat Sense, How the New Feline Science Can Make You a Better Friend to Your Pet. I wanted to get some listener input in our conversation. John, let me share Katie on Facebook, who posted a picture of her cat, which is darling, and it looks like a tortoise shell. And she says that my cat Sasha's favorite game is to sit on top of her tree, her cat tree, and hit my boyfriend or me on the head as we walk by. So a little hunting going on there, or what's that all about?
Well, it sounds as if it started with hunting, sure, but because cats are very sensitive to, cats' eyes are very sensitive to movement. So, but they wouldn't normally hunt from up the top of a tree. So there's something else going on there, I think. And I think what it is that the cat has simply learned that this is a great way of getting their attention. It's something that all cats have to work out for themselves. One of the more common ways of getting your attention is to meow at you. And, of course, we think of all cats as doing that, but, in fact, they don't. Some don't. Some are very silent. And the meow is not heard very much when cats are talking to each other. It's something that they reserve for talking to us. And I think they actually have to work it out for themselves, that this is what we respond to. But sometimes it's not the meow. I mean, I don't know whether Katie's Sasha actually does meow or not, but whether the cat does that or not, it's likely that she's also learned that she gets a reaction by doing this swiping. I hope she doesn't draw blood.
But, I hope not too. Now, I want to understand this. So cats don't meow to communicate with each other, but they will meow to communicate with us.
That's right. I've done a lot of studies of feral cats and farm cats in an attempt to, by finding out how they talk to each other and how they organise their lives. It's really the only model we have for how they might be thinking about us and how they communicate with us and so on. And although there are some striking similarities, like, you know, cats will rub on one another to show they're friendly, they'll rub around our legs to show they like us. So it's the same piece of behaviour. But when it comes to the meow, it's actually very rare. Most farm cats and feral cats are pretty much silent. And so what other scientists have worked out is that every cat kind of learns this for itself. It learns that if it meows, it gets us to look up because we have our noses buried in TV screens and books and all sorts of things. And then the cat can continue the conversation, point out what it is that it wants. Some cats seem to develop a whole repertoire of meows, different noises for meaning different things. So one for it's time for food, and another one for could you open the door, and another one for can you let me outdoors, or whatever the cat wants at the time. And they seem to be private languages between the cats, each cat and its owner. So people have taken recordings of all these different meows done by one cat, played it back to other cat owners, and they've gone, well, it's a meow, but I've no idea what any of them mean. They are private languages, and the cats work them out for themselves. I mean, who's the smartest, the cat or the owner? I'm not sure, but certainly somebody's being smart there.
They certainly are smart. You have to put it into context. Yeah, I know what Ray, my cat, is saying when he's meowing loudly underneath a closed window. He wants that window open so he can jump in and look out at the squirrel that's at the bird feeder. And then he will, and he doesn't do it a lot, but now actually I'm hearing him chatter a whole lot more. What is that? What's he doing there? He's making some sort of clattering sound as he's looking at the bird or the squirrel on the bird feeder.
I'm going to have to confess that nobody's really come up with a good explanation for that one. It's probably a sign of frustration, but they don't do it under any other circumstances. They're looking at, as you absolutely say, and exactly the same things happens with cats over here in the UK, so it can't be any kind of cultural thing. It must be really instinctive as far as they're concerned. And they see birds that they can't get at, and they start chattering. Now, it could be just that they're frustrated, but cats will do other things when they're frustrated, like they'll suddenly break off and groom themselves when you can't really work out why. And that's often a sign that they really don't know what to do next, that there's something they want and they can't get it and they don't know what to do. Some people have suggested that the chattering noise, some animals might actually be curious about that and so get a little bit too close to the cat while investigating. I've never seen that proved in any way, but it's an interesting idea.
Very funny. All right. Well, we have some callers, so let's let Abby in Appleton on. Hi, Abby.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Do you have a cat?
Yes, two Bengal cats.
Bengal?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So what my question is what the guest thinks about Bengal cats or any cats that are domestic and bred with wild cats, which Bengals are.
So the Bengal is crossbred with a wild cat?
Yeah, I believe that it is a leopard. I mean, it's more of a domesticated leopard from my understanding nowadays. But yeah, it's a domestic cat bred with wildcat, and they are fantastic. They're just like dogs. They'll fetch. It's crazy.
John?
Yes, Bengals are popular over here too, and increasingly so. They are indeed a cross between a domestic cat and a thing called the leopard cat. It's an Asian leopard cat. It's not really related to the leopard particularly. It just has those lovely leopard rosettes, the big spots that you get on the purebred Bengals. And that was the reason that they were originally bred, was to have that beautiful coat. I think the very interesting characters that they have came along as a kind of for the ride. The original idea was just to produce a cat with that beautiful coat. They are most of the ones available for people to buy are like about 1/32nd. So it's a way back in the ancestry, the Asian leopard cat. But they do have a very strong effect on their personality. They're very active. We just recently completed a study with the BBC over here, and I hope that documentary will get shown on PBS because I certainly had a lot of fun making it, and I think a lot of people over here had a lot of fun watching it, called The Secret Life of the Cat, and there were a couple of Bengals in that. One of the things we had were activity meters on collars so that we could tell exactly how much time each cat had been active for the day. And your average domestic cat was active for 20% of the day, and the two Bengals were active for 60% of the 24 hours. So they're kind of more active than humans. That's contrary to the usual idea that cats are lazy animals. Bengals are exactly the opposite. They can roam quite far. Some of them can be aggressive. Some of them are very nice laid-back animals, but they certainly demand a lot of attention. That's for sure. Yeah, you need to be around them.
Why does a cat cuddle and purr and headbutt you 1 minute, and then after you stroke him a few times, pet him a few times, swat you with his paw, and maybe even bite you?
Cats are a little bit unsure about their whole relationship, or some cats, I should say. I mean, many cats are very, very comfortable with their owners, but there are many cats which, as you say, appear perfectly comfortable to begin with, but then seem to turn on you. And I think the reason for this is that normal cat social life, if you, as I have examined it in cats that are just kind of living their own lives on farms or whatever, without many people around, you find that the interactions they have, the conversations they have, are really quite short. They're very meaningful, I'm sure. I mean, they don't go on for very long. And I think it's something in some cats' nature that really, you know, they're saying, well, okay, yeah, but I'm, you know, it was fun to talking to you, but now I've got to do something else. And it's and some of them just seem to get over it and go, well, okay, well, this is fine. I'll let this carry on. But there is a natural tendency for cats not to socialize for too long, and, you know, just a minute or two at the most, and then move on. So I think that's all they're doing.
Well, we're going to have a quick pledge drive update, and then we will get back to talking about our cats and why cats do what they do, and your questions about your cat, perhaps, for our guest John Bradshaw, who is the author of Cat Sense: How the New Feline Science Can Make You a Better Friend to Your Pet. But joining me just for a few moments here with an update on our fall membership drive is Bill Martins. And Bill, so far so good?
So far so good, yeah. But we do have some work to do to reach that goal of 60 pledges for this hour. We need 46 more in about the next 23 minutes. So it sounds like a lot, but it certainly can be done, and it certainly can be with your pledge of support. So you can help us stay on track by making your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you decide how much to pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. You get to determine the amount of your pledge. Every pledge is appreciated, and every pledge will help pay for the programs that you love on Wisconsin Public Radio. You can ask for the book Cat Sense: How the New Feline Science Can Make You a Better Friend to Your Pet with your pledge of $180 or more. That's $15 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here's a question for you. What does public radio mean? Well, it doesn't mean government-funded radio. It doesn't mean free radio. Public radio means listener-supported radio.
Listener support is the single largest source of Wisconsin Public Radio's operating budget. More than business contributions, more than federal tax dollars, more than state tax dollars, your gift of any amount really does matter at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I enjoy your programs. What I enjoy most about it is, you know, I'm born in Milwaukee. I have an urban point of view of things. When I listen to your callers calling throughout the states, I have all kinds of points of view from a rural, farm, you name it. I just like to hear the points of view through the state, and I enjoy and I learn from the other callers.
I'm Joy Cardine with Bill Martins, and you're listening to the Fall Membership Drive on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can make your pledge of support to Wisconsin Public Radio by calling 888-202-2552 or go to WPR.org and make your pledge of support.
Yep, and it's easy to take Wisconsin Public Radio for granted. You tune in to WPR, and every time you hear something good.
But if you travel around the country, you realize what a gem we do have here in Wisconsin really is unique. You won't find this anywhere else. We're proud of Wisconsin Public Radio, and you can be too, because you make it possible with your support.
Don't take it for granted. It really is something special, and you can help make it possible with your pledge of support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And remember that during this hour, we have a special thank you gift for you that you will appreciate, especially if you're a cat lover like I am. We are offering Cat Sense, How the New Feline Science Can Make You a Better Friend to Your Pet, the book written by our guest this hour for your pledge of $15 a month. That's $180 to Wisconsin Public Radio. You can go online to pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Support for WPR comes from listeners who donate. The first program you ever heard on WPR was made possible thanks to other listeners, like you. Their financial support made it possible for you to discover public radio. Return the favor at WPR.org.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about cats and cat behavior with John Bradshaw. He is the foundation director of the Anthrozoology Institute at the University of Bristol and author of Cat Sense. And we are welcoming your questions for him. Does your cat do something that you don't understand? Do you have multiple cats? Do they get along? In fact, we have a caller who's in that situation. Douglas in Lancaster is with us. Hi, Douglas.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Very good. You have a bunch of cats?
Well, my parents do. My parents live in a small town down in Ohio, which is kind of a farm town. And over the few years that they've been down there, they've acquired 5 cats. They have 3 male and 2 female. And in the few years that they've acquired these cats, for the first few years, the first cat that they got, the oldest, has kind of run the show, so to say. But as the society has evolved in my parents' house, the 2 females seem to kind of take dominance over the rest of them, and the smallest of the females seems to rule all the cats, even though the other female seems to disagree. So I'm just kind of wondering, you know, they're all fixed, they're all spayed and neutered, and I'm just kind of wondering if you know, there's any transition to that in the wild or, you know, on barn cats or anything like that. Or how that comes into play,
John? Is there some sort of pack going on here?
Sort of, yes, I think so. A cat society is matriarchal. It's based on cooperation between females. Males tend to be pretty much solitary once they get to be about 6 months old. So the time they become mature. they go off on their own. I mean, they can still carry on hanging around in the same place, especially if they're neutered. If they're not neutered, they will generally start disliking one another and being rivals. But if they've been fixed, then they'll carry on. But it seems to be something that female cats do best is making alliances with other cats. So what could have happened here is that the two females, once they kind of got to know one another, I'm assuming they weren't related to begin with, but once they got to know one another, kind of figured that out and have then able to start controlling the way that the three males move around. The size, again, is not really a great predictor of which cat is going to end up on top, so to speak. All cats are pretty well armoured. They've got nice sharp teeth and nice claws, so they're very wary around each other. And it can just be a feisty, small cat that ends up controlling where everybody goes in the household. It doesn't have to be the biggest one.
Thank you very much, Douglas, for the call. So what does this mean for our decisions about owning multiple cats? I'm wondering if we should have cats of different genders.
If they're all fixed, I don't think there's any reason why not. It's rare these days that people will keep a pet tomcat, and those who do are kind of kidding themselves, I think, because a real tomcat will spend a lot of time out looking for females and only come back when it's needs food and water. So if you have the cats fixed, they can carry on being friends. I don't think it matters whether they're males or females. I think in a multi-cat household, there are two ways to approach that, really. One is to get some cats, if you've none at all at the moment, get some cats that are already getting on well together. And the most obvious thing to do would be to get a couple of kittens from the same litter or a couple of adults that have grown up together so that you know they're going to be okay with each other, because that's certainly not guaranteed with cats. And once they start to dislike one another, then it's difficult to alter. With dogs, you can generally train them to see things the other way. And most dogs will be happy to get along with other dogs anyway. But with cats, once they start kind of carving up your house between them, it's quite difficult to break those barriers. The other way to do it, if you've already got a cat and you want to get another one, the sensible thing to do is to introduce them to one another in a cat-like way, not the way that we would do, which is to stand at opposite ends of the hallway and shake hands, because that isn't going to work for cats. What works is to introduce them to each other's smells, first of all. So you take a couple of pieces of cloth, rub one on your cat, take it to wherever your cat is. Maybe it's a rehoming centre or something like that. Show the cloth, let the other cat sniff the cloth, do the reverse with the other piece of cloth. So rub the flank of the new cat, bring it back home. Do that a few times before the cats even see each other, before even though they're in the same building. And then when you do the physical introduction, do it very gently with the cats not initially being able to get at one another, so that one of them cannot chase the other one away, which is what can happen. And that's what you want to try and avoid. Once the chasing starts, unless it's very lighthearted, the whole relationship will just fail to establish. But if you do it very, very gradually in the way I've described, it's remarkable how many of those cats end up really being lifelong friends.
Let's take another call from Kim in Mequon. Hi, Kim.
Hi. Okay, I bought your book, and I'm looking for the answer to this question. But we have a cat. She's about, 15 years old. And just recently, she starts crying, meow crying, in the middle of the night, usually at about 4 a.m. And we try to, she has all her needs met. Like, she has food, she has water. And we will capture her and put her in the basement just so we can sleep. But I'm wondering, why is she doing this? And that recently she started doing it during the day, too, when, like I said, her needs are met. We pet her, we feed her, fresh water, clean litter, everything.
But she'll start in the middle of the night, she'll start meowing and crying.
Yeah, and recently she started doing it in the day, too.
Yeah, I'm sorry to have to say that this is very common in elderly cats. 15 years isn't that old, but it's certainly old enough for this to start. This is almost certainly the feline equivalent of Alzheimer's. It's the cat is suddenly waking up or realizing that she doesn't know where she is, because she's forgotten you, the place, everything. And just yowling for security, somebody come help me. Then maybe that the episode will pass and she will kind of reorientate herself and remember who you are and remember where she is, and that'll be okay. It's just possible there's a metabolic problem there. I'm not a veterinarian, but I've certainly heard of thyroid problems causing this similar behavior. So it's worth going to your veterinarian and getting the thyroid hormones checked out. But I think there's certainly medication.
Good place with Nancy Marshall-Genzer. Thank you.
I think we got a little bit of a bleed through from the BBC there going on. So, maybe it went away now. Are you still there,
no,
John Bradshaw?
I do not want you to. So let me note that.
Well, I think we lost our connection with John Bradshaw, and instead we're hearing a BBC program. He was joining us from studios at the BBC in Southampton. But let's see here. I think we'll probably leave it there, and we'll tell you how you can support Wisconsin Public Radio and get a copy of John Bradshaw's book, Cat Sense: How the New Feline Science Can Make You a Better Friend to Your Pet. And I'm really sorry that I wasn't able to get an answer to the question about why cats like to hang out in boxes or bags or some sort of container. I guess we'll leave that as a tease. Maybe we can ask John Bradshaw about that and relate at the end of the hour. Joining me is Bill Martins. He is the producer director of this show, one of the producer directors of this show, to encourage you to make a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. Listeners provide the single largest source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is our fall membership drive. It is your chance to support the programs you count on with a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And fellow cat owner, by the way. Mm-hmm. And we are looking for 31 more pledges in the next 10 minutes or so. Your pledge right now helps pay for the programs you count on all year long. So thank you to all of you who have already given. If you haven't, then make that pledge of support now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And for your pledge of $15 a month or a $180 pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, we will be happy to send you Cat Sense: How the New Feline Science Can Make You a Better Friend to Your Pet. Lots of great information in here about the past, the present, and the future of cats, and lots of practical information on why cats do what they do. And I am so sorry I didn't get the answer to the box, bag, container question. Do Cliff and Claire like to do that?
Yeah, especially Claire. I mean, you come back from the grocery store with a paper bag, and she's in there sometimes even before all the stuff is out of it. Sometimes, you know, I'll be going to sleep at night, and then you'll hear some rustling in the bag, and it's like, oh, Claire found another bag.
Yeah, I'm assuming that they're doing, I mean, some of it might be play, but I'm also thinking that they're in an enclosed kind of cave, and they're hunting or something, you know?
Yeah, I think they've got an imagination like that as well. So that, or a box, or just anything they can crawl into, and especially ones that don't even really fit them. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, you've
right.
got a small shoebox and they try to cram in there. It's like, what are you thinking?
We had a Jen on Twitter who said, my cat prefers the stock pot to the shoebox. That's pretty good. But anyway, if you are a cat lover or a lover of animals in general, you want to learn more about cats, this would be a great resource for you. It is Cat Sense: How the New Feline Science Can Make You a Better Friend to Your Pet. And it's yours for a pledge of $15 a month or more, a $180 pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A lot of people listen to WPR while driving. You know, we hear from people who are glad to know the weather forecast around the state as they set out on a long trip. And we hear from people who are sorry to reach their destination because they were so engrossed in what they were listening to.
If you've ever sat in your car to hear the end of something, you have experienced what we call the driveway moment. When was your last driveway moment? Chances are it wasn't too long ago. Support your source of great in-car companionship at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. But if you're driving now, be careful. Pull over before you make your pledge.
Exactly. And we need 28 more of you to make that pledge of support in the next 7 minutes in order to reach that goal of 60 pledges for this hour. I know we can do it. You guys have been coming through ever since this drive started. started on Friday. I know we can keep that going as we enter this first full week of the pledge drive, I guess, first and only full week of the pledge drive. So again, looking for 28 more of you to make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, this is Ari Shapiro from NPR News. Why not think of your support of public radio as a subscription? You subscribe to all sorts of things, magazines, maybe Netflix, maybe cable TV. By choosing to pay your public radio contribution monthly, you can add our voices to those other services that are worth a little something each month. And what you give to your station will probably be one of the smallest monthly payments you make, yet the biggest value of the bunch. Here's how to sign up, and thanks.
You can sign up by going to WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Bill Martins, and we are asking for your contribution of any amount to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio during this fall pledge drive. Whether your pledge is $5 a month or $100 a month or anything above, below, or in between, we appreciate and count on your gift.
Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Help pay for the programs you depend on. We're looking for 27 more pledges in the next 5 minutes. So make that donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you've never given before, let me tell you what to expect. It's very short. It takes just a few minutes. You answer some basic questions like your name, your address, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay for it.
And that's it. Make your first donation to WPR. You'll feel great about it. Many first-time donors give $5 a month, but the amount is totally up to you. You can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And do consider a pledge of $15 a month, especially if you would like the book Cat Sense as your thank you gift. For a $180 pledge or $15 a month or more to Wisconsin Public Radio, we will be happy to send you, if you'd like it, if you ask for it, Cat Sense, how the new feline science can make you a better friend to your pet. And you will be our friend, too, for that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hey, Joy, did Ray attack your printer at home this morning?
He always does that. I was another question I will have to look up in the book. Yeah, he's, I think, again, that's hunting. There's some kind of...
Hunting paper.
Yeah, hunting the paper that's mysteriously coming out of that black box. Yeah, he will always go after the printer. He will... He's a laser... beam a chaser too.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So
that works.
That's a part of the hunting that's still in that cat, I think. You know what our guest was going to say is that down the road he suspects that one way that we can improve our relationship with our pets and that we can maybe make our cats happier is to try to breed out some of that hunting instinct in the cat, so it won't kill the birds and maybe it can go outside and not get the birds at your bird feeder. But anyway, we would appreciate your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're looking for 27 of you to do just that in the next couple of minutes to reach that goal of 60 pledges. You can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And consider becoming a sustainer. Your sustaining membership automatically renews each month, and you'll pay your pledge in affordable monthly installments. It's really easy to set up. It's a great way to make a lasting impact on WPR. You choose how to give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And, you know, you can become a sustainer at $15 a month. You can have your credit card charge $15 a month if that's what you want, or you can have it automatically come out of your bank account, $15 a month, and that is the level that we are asking for the thank you gift, Cat Sense, how the new feline science can make you a better friend to your pet. But whatever you decide, if you're not interested in this particular book, you don't have a cat, you can make a pledge of any amount to help support the programming at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make that pledge of support because you love the Joy Cardine Show. You love programs like this where we can talk about cats one day, and then I know tomorrow we're going to be talking with financial planner Kevin McKinley for On Your Money, taking your personal finance questions. We're also going to talk about probably some more of the latest on the government shutdown and pending debt ceiling. So you get a little bit of everything on this program. And if that's something that's important to you, make that pledge of support right now. Help us reach our goal. We need 24 more of you in the next couple of minutes. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks to Allison and John from Eau Claire who pledged and say, we love Wisconsin Public Radio in our home. It keeps us current, keeps us smart, and keeps us living in an informed community. Thank you so much. You can join them at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.